Has the Fed run out of ammunition?
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Global markets seem unimpressed this morning with the news from the Federal Reserve. The central bank's chairman, Ben Bernanke, announced yesterday he will expand the Operation Twist monetary stimulus program. That means the Fed is buying more long-term treasury bonds in an attempt to support the economic recovery. But it's less than many economists were hoping for, and it's got some asking if the Fed has exhausted its ability to boost the economy. Our New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore reports.
Ben Bernanke is a former professor, an Ivy Leaguer who speaks quietly, but he bristles if you suggest that the Federal Reserve is out of ammunition.
I do think that monetary policy still does have some capacity to strengthen the economy by easing financial conditions.
In the nerdy world of economics, that's a declaration of war. On the other side of the battleground are economists like Steve Hanke at Johns Hopkins, who say that Bernanke is fighting a losing battle.
The portion of the total money supply that the Fed really accounts for is now about 15%. About 85% is produced by private banking system. And what's going on, the private banks aren't loaning much money. They're contracting.
No matter how powerful Bernanke's weapons, they can't fight a global recession. In New York, I'm Heidi Moore for Marketplace.
Well, it's amazing if you think about it that 5 years almost after the recession began, the Fed is still taking such extraordinary action to boost the economy. It's unlike any economic recovery in recent memory. But then again, the Great Recession has also been pretty unique. Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell joins us now to discuss. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, Chris, what should we be comparing this recovery to?
We should be comparing it to the jobless recoveries of the early 1990s and the early 2000s. You know, you map out, you graph this recovery that we're going through to those two previous recoveries. They just look the same, unlike the mid-70s and the early 80s, where you had much more of a rebound in the job market.
But this recession was much bigger than anything we've seen since even before the 80s, right?
That's right. But this recession has just exposed a number of ongoing trends in this economy. So, you know, businesses are really embracing productivity rather than hiring workers. You know, let's get more out of our people before we hire more.
Yeah, really.
And you got the information technologies, and those have wiped out whole departments of low-level white-collar workers. And then, of course, there's globalization. So, Jeremy, if you look at a lot of these companies, you know, the S&P 500 companies, the ones that we talk about all the time, they're hiring. They are hiring, but much of the hiring is going on overseas.
Well, so does that mean that every recovery we're going to see now going forward is going to be a jobless recovery in the United States?
I think that needs to be our expectation. And here's the thing. What that tells us is during a recovery, during the good times, okay, we can't exactly call what we're going through right now the good times, but let's assume that we do have good times. You know, we need to focus a lot more on training programs, on working with the less skilled, the less educated workers, because these are the ones that are really being hammered during this period of time. And so there's really a lesson for the recoveries. Where do we invest our dollars as opposed to a lesson from the downturn?
Well, then how do we get out of a situation like this, Chris?
You know, I wish I could have some sort of optimistic tale to tell you, Jeremy, but here's the lesson of World War II and the Great Depression, which is you had a lot of hardcore unemployed and business didn't want to hire them. What changed that circumstance? World War II, when all of a sudden business had to adjust and they would hire anybody that was willing to work.
Well, I think I'm probably not alone in hoping that that is not the way that we get out of this recession. Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, and I agree with you.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are down around the world this morning, 1.3% lower in Hong Kong, down about 0.4% right now in Paris. Oil prices continue to fall. They're down to $80 a barrel in New York trading this morning, which is the lowest level since October. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow fell 12 points to close at 12,824.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
Tonight, there will be what you might call a perfect storm when the heat and thunder collide in Miami. I'm talking, of course, about the NBA Finals. The Miami Heat lead the Oklahoma City Thunder 3-1 right now, which means one more win for Miami and it gets the championship. And wait till you hear how much people are going to have to shell out for tickets. From station WLRN in Miami, here's Kenny Malone.
Hi, how you doing, sir?
Hey, how you going?
Bo Irwin is from Manchester, England. He's 25 years old and just happens to be in town for arguably the biggest basketball game in Miami history. So he popped his head into Tickets of America, a ticket broker down the street from the Heat's arena.
I just want to know how much they're going to be on Thursday.
All right, so we've got a couple different options for you, all starting around the $500 range.
A little too much for Bo Irwin.
Okay, yeah, I'll just have a little think and then I'll come back.
Here's my card.
Okay, cool.
Prices for this Game 5 have gotten as high as $25,000 for a courtside seat. But maybe fans should be more concerned with the future.
In years past, many ownerships have decided to raise their ticket prices after a championship has been won.
Ann-Britt Stengel runs Sports Traveler, a sports-centric travel agency in Chicago.
Because they do also know that the demand of their ticket is going up, and the demand on their season ticket usually goes up also.
Stengel says there's no formula for how much tickets go up, but she says you'll want to get your tickets for the Heat season opener as early as possible. Everyone wants to be there when the champions get their rings. In Miami, I'm Kenny Malone for Marketplace.
Well, let's just see what happens tonight, won't we? And finally, there is a heat wave of a different sort going on here in the East. And thanks to a coinciding closure of a factory in Maryland, a calamity has occurred. There's a shortage of Good Humor's classic toasted almond chocolate eclair ice cream bars. The company says the issue should be resolved by the end of July. In the meantime, customers are going to be forced to choose from Good Humor's 21 other ice cream products. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.